Good afternoon and welcome to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News 104.3. This is Katie Bosler doing Mondays now. Today we have divas Sandy Fortier and Giselle Stone in the first hour. They're part of Who's Your Diva 2012. That's a Juno Lyric Opera fundraiser this Friday night at Centennial Hall. Also, Steve Kosis will be here with a preview of Tuesday's planetarium presentation about black holes. Kathy Reddy will highlight Friday's dinner and auction to benefit the Whale Project. And we'll hear from Jim Panora about Wednesday's e-waste event. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more. And, of course, music on a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Up next, National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The family of a Lakota man whose remains were buried in Connecticut more than 100 years ago welcomed him home Sunday with a traditional burial ceremony in South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, the Pine Ridge Reservation community of Manderson was filled with the sounds of a Lakota drum as Albert Afraid of Hawk was escorted to his final resting place.
Albert Afraid of Hawk was touring with Buffalo Bill's Wild West show when he died of food poisoning in 1900. It took 4 years to coordinate Afraid of Hawk's return to his home on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Marlis Afraid of Hawk says it's hard to believe that her grandfather's long journey is finally at an end.
And it makes me just so happy. I am so happy and I'm glad the people that were involved in all this, they are here to show respect for Albert.
Those people included Robert Young, an amateur historian who helped locate Albert's remains. Rick Two Dogs is a spiritual leader for the Lakota on Pine Ridge. He says the repatriation brings closure to Albert Afraid of Hawk as well as his family, but it's also an indication of a bigger issue.
Repatriation in a sense that a lot of these people need to come home. But then repatriation also means like a lot of our sacred things need to come home, like sacred pipes and drums and medicine bundles, which are no longer in our possession.
As the Lakota drum honored him, Albert Afraid of Hawk's remains were first placed on a scaffold, then buried by his family at sunset. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Precipitation has been hard to come by across the northern plains this summer. Several tribes are now in the worst drought category. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbold reports.
The National Drought Mitigation Center at the University of Nebraska publishes a weekly online report called the Drought Monitor. It shows dry conditions on a 5-point scale from abnormally dry to exceptional drought. For the first time this year, the worst drought conditions have crept into South Dakota. The Yankton Sioux Tribe in southeast South Dakota has part of its land in exceptional drought. A small section of the Pine Ridge Reservation is in the exceptional category for drought as well. Todd Heitkamp with the National Weather Service says there's not a lot of relief in extended forecasts.
I think if any area looks a little bit more favorable for moisture, it would be that area out west. But here in the east, it just does not look like we're going to see any widespread rain. We're out there, they might get a little bit more better chances of, widespread rain over the next 6 to 10 days.
Some parts of the plains have recorded their driest months in decades. A stretch of exceptional drought reaches from northwest Iowa to southern Oklahoma. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
Habitat for Humanity and First Nations representatives began raising walls on the first housing project on First Nations settlement land in Canada. According to a press release, the nonprofit housing organization hopes this milestone project will lead to more habitat homes being built in partnership with Aboriginal people. Assembly of First Nations National Chief Sean Atleo says the first house project is a critical step towards providing quality options to First Nations families and communities in need of affordable housing. Pilot projects to help First Nations families started about 4 years ago. Since then, about 34 families, mostly in urban areas, have been served. This week's work on the first house project in the Yukon near Whitehorse is a triplex housing development. During this month in 1917, the Cocopah Indian Reservation was established by executive order. More than 1,000 acres were set aside for the reservation. The Cocopah Indian Tribes Reservation is now more than 6,000 acres and includes a casino, resort, golf course, and a speedway near Yuma, Arizona. According to the tribe's website, visitors can enjoy activities while learning about the tribe's culture and taking in the great scenic beauty of the region. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
On KTOO FM 104.3, this is Katie Bosler with A Juno Afternoon. And with me in the studio are Sandy Fortier and Giselle Stone, two of the nine divas. We'll tell you more about that in a second. But they are divas for this week anyway, right?
Yes.
We're always divas. Okay. Now, from what I understand, this is a fundraiser for the Juno Lyric Opera. This is the second year in a row that this fundraiser has occurred. Can why don't you tell me, just kind of in a nutshell, what it's all about?
You want to go?
Okay, so this is a fundraiser for Juno Lyric Opera, and it entails us nine divas going out and we're getting votes, and a dollar is a vote, so we get votes, and whoever gets the most votes at the end is the crowned the diva. And so you can vote all the way up until the event, and then on the night of, each diva sings two songs. It's at Centennial Hall. They go all out. It's really crazy. And then you can vote for your divas then, and then they crown the diva at the end of the night.
Okay, and so I think on a Juno afternoon here, we've been having divas on, two at a time, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to be a candidate for a diva?
Last year, I actually sang backup for Shoda Strouser, who's the 2011 crowned diva. So back then, they were like, oh, you should think about doing this next year.
Yeah. I think they just look at people who sing around town and see if they're willing to go out and do the fundraising and if they can be on stage and put on a good show.
So being able to sing is key.
So it's a part of it.
Or on key.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're a good fundraiser, they'd probably thank you, too.
They'd probably drill.
So how do you fundraise?
Well, we've been selling ads for the program, which is one thing. And then going out to, like, local businesses and selling ads. Also just family and friends asking for support for Juno Lyric Opera. Or just people who want to see you be crowned the Juno Lyric Opera diva, that they just need to put forth, you know, a couple dollars on the website. That's what I've been doing the most, is that sending out the website, the junolyricopera.org. And then we each have a little photo on there under the divas link, and you can click on our photo and you can look at our bios, and then you can click vote now, and it takes you directly to a page where you can choose to, like, make a donation. It can be actually a repeating donation or just a one-time donation, and it goes straight towards the diva's name. So every, like, dollar that we basically fundraise goes towards our name in the competition.
Is the final competition then Saturday night when there's the final votes? That works.
This Saturday
is all leading up to the night.
You know, we're ranked going into it, and then we put it all out there on the stage and hope that people will give even more so that we can, you know, take over.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Me too.
Okay. Well, I do have some set questions. I feel kind of like Burt Parks or something. That we have for you divas that have been asked of all the divas, I understand, on this program. So, I'll just ask the question, and then I'll have each of you answer it. So, you want to start with you, Sandy?
Depends on the question.
Okay. All right. Well, have you picked out what you'll be singing Saturday, and how did you pick the songs?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are certain songs that I've just always wanted to sing and haven't really had the venue to sing it in. So I did pick out, I'm singing Paris by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, and she was here a couple years ago. and I've just always wanted to try it out, but it's pretty rockery, and where else do you get to sing that? So that's why I picked that one for this one, because we had a band playing behind us. And then the other song I'm singing is Defying Gravity from Wicked, and I don't know, just people requested it, so I thought I'd give it a shot.
All right. How about
it's
you?
It's a true diva song.
Yeah.
Defying gravity.
But they won't hoist me into the air or anything, so I won't actually be defying gravity.
I'm singing I Say a Little Prayer for You in the style of Aretha Franklin, which will be really fun.
Oh,
and I'm having backup singers, and that's why I wanted to sing that one. I love Aretha Franklin. I love soul music, and have not had a lot of chances to be able to sing soul music in a kind of venue, so I wanted to take that opportunity and just do soul, like a really good soul tune, and looking really forward to having some of my friends and my sister come and sing backup for me, so that'll be really fun. And then I'm singing the Amy Winehouse song Valerie, and that's a newer contemporary song, but also soul, like a soul kind of feeling, so it'll be fun.
Yeah, and backup singers. Do you get backup singers as well?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool is that?
Some people have, like, a horn section. Oh, I think Giselle
does. I do have a horn section.
Has a horn section and backup singer.
Oh, so you each have your own little band.
Yeah, you kind of put it together. I mean, like, depending on the tune. Mm-hmm. So going into it, I knew if I was going to sing I Say a Little Prayer, then I would need, you know, at least three solid girls to sing backup for it, so I had to find those girls and come. But I think I have the one that's coming from farthest away, because my sister's flying in tomorrow from Bend, Oregon.
Oh, how
sing
exciting.
For it, so
wow.
It'll be really fun.
I'm going to be out of town. I really wish I could be there. Okay. Well, let's get on to the next question. I'll just start with you on this one.
Okay.
Describe the most exciting performance role event at which you have been a part of or entertained.
That's a tough question. You know, I like being on stage a lot and have had a lot of opportunities to do so. But I think the times that I love it the most and are most exciting, I had a couple friends. My friend actually Ed Littlefield, who came up and played jazz, and Christian Fabian, and they came up here last spring. And I knew, like, I love singing jazz, and I just wanted a chance to be able to play around with them and actually do that. Like, you know, they're working professionally down in Seattle, and we went to the Alaskan on an open mic night, and it was packed, and we didn't even rehearse before. We just got on stage, and they started playing a couple jazz tunes,
and
I just got to sing. And I think that's the most exciting for me, when I get in that kind of element where I don't really know what's, you know, going to happen, and it's just a group. We actually had a guitar player jump up too and play with us, and so it was like this trio with myself singing and, you know, a bunch of friends watching and just enjoying that kind of performance space where it's just, you know, that closeness, and then being able to explore is really exciting.
Great. How about you, Sandy?
Well, I just started singing in Juneau a year and a half ago, actually in general doing solo things, so probably my first solo performance here was the most exciting and nerve-wracking, and, you know, it was like, there was a lot of energy. It was with the Juno Cabaret, and it was at the Silver Bow back room, so it was really intimate and scary, but exciting. So I made it through and decided I wanted to keep singing.
Great. All right. Okay, well, let's see here. What do you have? Our next question is, have you, Sandy, have you ever had a performance go bad? What happened?
Well, I'm a flute player by trade, so I've played in a lot of bands, but some that we just bomb and we have to start over again. I mean, I don't know. I guess that's not too bad, except that you work so hard towards something and then
play the wrong note.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, you're there and you're at this place and you're here. So, but not anything that's traumatizing unless I blocked it out.
How about you, Giselle?
I think the only, I always like revert to the one story of like freshman musical at JDHS, like where I went on stage and had like just run to use the bathroom like during intermission, and had pulled up a pair of shorts underneath, and my skirt got tucked in the back, and nobody let me know that it was in the back of my shorts, and went out on stage and did a whole musical number with my skirt tucked in and had it out in the front, and my little spank short showing in the back.
It probably feels like, part of the costume.
I know, maybe. Who knows? It's probably pretty obvious.
Okay. Giselle, what have you learned from the accompanist you've worked with? Accompanist.
Right? The band, like the group that we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been very professional, which I've been very impressed by, like going into this situation. I haven't had a ton of time with the band, but it's been, you know, one of those things where we're both really prepared and then come together for a short meeting and are able to kind of, you know, practice really quickly and really efficiently. So mm-hmm. that's been really nice just to have that experience.
And who is your accompanist?
Mike Moss is playing piano. Mm-hmm. And, you know what, I don't remember all the guys' names who are playing.
Mm-hmm.
I know their first names. Mm-hmm. But it is a great group, and they're all really professional and are having a great time. And mm-hmm. so that's been really fun to get that experience of, like, rehearsing with a band. Because I think that's one of the most unique and the most attractive things about this project and the fundraiser is that you get to play with the, you know, you get to sing with the band and pick out a song to sing with a band, you know, a full band. So, and that's pretty unusual.
What a great opportunity.
Yeah.
How about you, Sandy?
Yeah, a lot of times here it's just piano, not just piano, but it's piano only that you get to sing mm-hmm. with. Well, like Giselle said, just being prepared every time I go in, like I've definitely learned that I don't want to be the weakest link. So I always try to over prepare and, you know, just all the accompanists in this town are just amazing and they just give a lot of good feedback and give ideas like, oh, why don't you do this lick like this? And, you know, mm-hmm. It's pretty creative, being willing to try new things.
Yeah, well, what a rich pool of creative, talented people we have mm-hmm. in this town,
mm-hmm.
which you two are a big part of. Let's see. I think I'm getting to the end of the questions here. oh, okay. If you could describe the diva that you want people to see. On Saturday. I don't know if you want to give away, you know, what you're going to wear or how you're going to do your beehive hair.
I think I'm just going to, I've from the beginning wanted to go really retro, so I'm going to have fun being a little retro diva, a little soulful. Since I get backup singers, I mean, we might as well, so it'll be fun.
I was trying to put together a persona, but then I just really wanted to sing these two songs that really have nothing to do with each other. So you'll see a bunch of different me's, but I'm definitely going to be in costume for Defying Gravity.
Oh,
and, just lots of sparkles and glitter, just in general, you know, trying to be sexy divas.
Mm-hmm.
How exciting. I'm getting chills and I can't even go. Well, it's going to be my mother's 80th birthday party in California, so I haven't. Okay, and finally, what advice would you give someone who wants to be a diva next year?
Start going out and fundraising, as they tell you. We've had a couple of ladies who have been really proactive about fundraising and have been really awesome about it and really spreading the word really well. And they're the ones you'll know, like if you go to the event, they'll probably be the top three that you'll still mm-hmm. announce, like the top three or the top mm-hmm. five standings. And then you'll see the names like shuffle around as people get more votes. But those ladies have been working really hard, like even, you know, like later this summer asking some businesses around town, there's repetitive names, you know, come out. They're like, oh, we already talked to this person. So I was like, well,
they beat me game.
Yeah.
I think if you just go out and you got to start singing, you got to put your name out there and then just, you know, let them know that you want to be a diva. I don't know if they plan on picking the same divas every year, so they'll eventually get to you and you just have to go sing in something, sing in an opera, sing in something and, you know, sing in a cabaret and, you know, be willing to fundraise because that is the other big part of it, so... Yeah,
well, Sandy Fautier and Giselle Stone, thank you so much for coming in
today.
On a Juno Afternoon. All the best to you on Saturday night.
Yeah, again, vote for me.
For those of you just tuning in, you can hear and see these two lovely ladies on Saturday night at 7:30 at Centennial Hall. This is the second annual fundraiser for the Juno Lyric Opera called Who's Your Diva? Next up, should have... Steve Kosas here about what's happening at the planetarium tomorrow night. But first, the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 10th of September, 2012. It's the birthday of the original Ren Tin Tin, the German Shepherd dog born in Lorraine, France, 1918, who starred in 23 movies for Warner Brothers, starting with Where the North Begins in 1923, and also starred in a radio program, The Wonder Dog, in which he did his own barking and did other sound effects. It's the birthday of the poet Mary Oliver, born Maple Heights, Ohio, 1935, dropped out of college when she was just a teenager, made a pilgrimage to Edna St. Vincent Millay's estate, upstate New York. Millay had been dead for several years, but her sister Norma still lived there. Norma and Mary Oliver hit it off, and Mary Oliver lived on the estate for several years, and it was there that she met Molly Malone Cook, who'd come to pay a visit to Millay. Oliver and Cook fell in love. They moved to Provincetown, Massachusetts. Cook became Oliver's literary agent, and sometimes she impersonated Mary Oliver for phone interviews because she hated talking to the press. They were together for more than 40 years, and after Cook died in 2005, Mary Oliver published Thirst, a collection of poems about her grief. It's the birthday of the Irish author Marion Keyes, born in Limerick, 1963, author of several bestsellers, Watermelon, Sushi for Beginners. In 2010, she wrote a newsletter to her fans talking about her own struggle with clinical depression. She said, "I feel like I'm living in hell. I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't write, I can't read, I can't talk to people. The worst thing is that I feel it will never end." Earlier this year, she published a cookbook called Saved by Cake, including some basic cake recipes for beginners, and also an account of her depression and how the act of baking helped her to recover. Marion Keyes, whose latest novel, The Mystery of Mercy Close, is due out this week. And it was on this date in 2008 the Large Hadron Collider was powered up for the first time, the world's largest particle accelerator, underground in the shape of a ring 17 miles in circumference, near Geneva, Switzerland. And it was there in July scientists announced that they may have found a subatomic particle that is the theoretical Higgs boson, sometimes called the God particle, the particle that they hope would explain how nothing first became something. Named for a young scientist named Peter Higgs, who is now 83 years old and who wept at the announcement. Here's a poem by Mary Oliver on her birthday, entitled In Blackwater Woods. "Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go." A poem by Mary Oliver in Blackwater Woods, from American Primitive, published by Back Bay Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, helping businesses leverage a powerful form of advertising, online reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Well, thank you, Garrison. Always very nice, the Writer's Almanac. This is Katie Bosler, host on Mondays now of a Juno Afternoon, and with me in the studio is Steve Kosas, who is on the board of the Friends of Marie Drake Planetarium. He's here to tell us about a presentation tomorrow night called Black Holes. Welcome, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Katie.
It's good to have you here.
Sure.
So tell us about what is planned for tomorrow night at the planetarium.
Well, tomorrow night we're doing one of our regular planetarium shows. So it'll be 6:30 p.m. Tuesday evening, and we start out with using our Spitz projector to show what the stars would look like in Juno if it was a clear night, which may be tomorrow.
Is it supposed to be clear tomorrow?
I didn't see the forecast.
Yeah, yeah. But, oh my gosh, look at it outside. Yeah, because that, I guess, is really one of the real gifts of the planetarium, isn't it? Because we don't have that gift that often, that it's clear out. And you can say, well, this is what it would like look like if you could see.
True. And secondly, from April to August, we don't have astronomical darkness. We have the midnight twilight from April to August, so we also don't see the stars well during, or the northern lights during that period also.
Yeah.
So that's a second reason for, the gift of planetarium in Juno.
Who knew? Astronomical darkness.
Mm. Yeah, the sun has to be more than 18 degrees above the horizon to have what's called astronomical darkness, which is true darkness.
Huh. So speaking of darkness, what's on the agenda for the black holes tomorrow night?
Well, that'll be our talk after we do the stars tonight on the Star Ball, made in Pennsylvania, 45 years old. And typically on our shows, we get a lot of questions about black holes. So I figured I'd do a show on it. And basically, we'll show some computer imagery of black holes. No one's ever seen a black hole. They have not been directly observed, but there's a lot of excellent astronomical evidence of compact, high-energy objects in our universe, and in our galaxy, too. There's a supermassive black hole center of our galaxy that black holes exist.
So what are black holes?
Well, black hole is a term coined by John Wheeler in the 60s, and it was predicted, first by Newton's gravitational laws in the 18th century. Lagrange and Michel in the 18th century predicted what's called black hole, and it's a region of space from that there's a that density is so great. In fact, the mass density enters what's called a singularity, that light cannot escape. There's kind of a event horizon, and from that area, which is the black hole area, it's bounded by what's called an event horizon, light does not escape. So it's so dense. Yeah. The gravity is so intense in this region that's called the black hole. It has an actual boundary that light cannot escape because of gravitational forces. It was first predicted in the 18th century, but Einstein's general field equations in 1916, the mathematician Schwarzschild finally did the final solution to show that black holes mathematically would exist, but they weren't observed astronomically till in the 50s and 60s from radio telescopes, basically. They saw energy sources that could not be explained by anything else than a black hole.
So the energy is at such a level that the light can't escape.
Well, it isn't the energy at such a level. It's the gravitational force at such
force.
A level that the light cannot escape.
Ooh.
And the black hole itself, in a sense, the boundary of it, the inside, is no longer in our universe. Mathematically, there's no explanation for what is actually in the black hole. The speculation that it's what's called a singularity, which is a region of space that has infinite density. But no one really understands what infinite density means. But conveniently, the black hole itself is partitioned from our universe, so we don't have to deal with it. It's partitioned from our universe, what's called an event horizon.
Event horizon.
Which is the boundary of the black hole.
Got it. And you're going to show some artist renditions.
Yes, there's no direct imagery of a black hole, just indirect imageries from the effect black holes have on surrounding mass and gases.
Okay.
And there's a lot of imagery of that currently.
So this presentation starts at 6:30 tomorrow night.
Yes.
And the planetarium, for people who aren't aware of where it is, this is at the old Marie Drake.
Yeah, the Marie Drake building, it's called.
Marie Drake building.
By that artificial turf surrounded by the, I guess it's a 10-foot-high fence.
So it's right in between the high school and Harborview School.
Exactly. Okay. Or the swimming pool in Harvard View School, however you want to put it.
And the presentation goes for how long? It starts at 6:30?
It'll last an hour.
An hour, okay.
And it's free for all ages. I mean, the black hole talk is kind of geared for adults, but the imagery is striking and stimulating enough that I think all ages will enjoy the imagery, even if they don't understand exactly what a black hole is.
And where'd you find the imagery?
Oh, it's all over. It's on the internet. You just use a search engine, black hole, and you'll see the imagery. There's no problem getting it.
Okay. Well, Steve, anything you'd like to add about what's happening at the planetarium?
Yeah, I've had a little time. A year ago, the planetarium formed a nonprofit group, Friends of Marie Drake Planetarium. There's five of us on the board. I'm one of the board members. And basically, our current planetarium projector still runs, Maine, Pennsylvania, Spitz A3P, installed in 67, but we wanted to form a nonprofit to start getting grants for a replacement when the current projector does stop running.
Okay, and it's on its last legs?
Well, no, actually, there's a few. No, it's actually still running quite well. Uh-huh. And in fact, surprising enough, the old analog projectors with star globes, precision-drilled globes with arc lamp in the center, have better star imagery than the new digital projectors. Because of technology differences and expenses.
Okay, but it looks like we still need to prepare here. And
yeah, this is a backup. We'll run this projector into the ground, just like a used car, but we wanted to have a backup to replace the current one when the analog projector goes out.
Okay, so you have some fundraising and grant writing going on.
Yes, in fact, we just got a grant. We started doing this grant writing, and Douglas Dornan Foundation basically gave us a $2,500 matching fund. Mm-hmm. And we're still working on that matching fund, so if I could, I could give out a phone number to call for our matching fund.
Sure.
Okay, the phone number, this is Douglas Dornan Foundation, local Juno Community Foundation. And if you call the number 500-2941, anyone who's interested in donating, we get matching funds for that. So that would be quite helpful for working towards getting a new planetarium projector.
Is there a website people can go to?
Yeah, mariedrakeplanetarium.com. That's one word, mariedrakeplanetarium.com.
Okay, so people can pledge funds there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. We have information for it there.
Or they can call 500-2941.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
To for funds.
All right, well, Steve, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, actually, one more thing.
Oh, sure.
We're having a show at the last Tuesday of this month, which would be September 25. And Ken Fix, this will be 6:30 p.m., September 25th. Ken Fix is doing a show on the latest Mars Explorer. I think it's the Mars Rover. And he's also doing a show on the stars tonight. And then he'll put out a show on the new Mars Explorer, the Mars Rover, March 25th, 6:30 p.m.
Fantastic. Well, okay. And again, tomorrow night is black holes.
Yes,
and,
true.
And you are doing this presentation. This is at the planetarium, 6:30.
Right.
And you picked out a tune to, in honor of that, Black Hole Sun from Soundgarden.
Right. I was a fan since it disbanded. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much for coming in, Steve.
Sure.
Man.
That was Soundgarden with Black Holes, yes, in honor of the planetarium presentation tomorrow night at 6:30 on Black Holes. Now moving on, with me in the studio is Kathy Ruddy of the Whale Project to tell us about a very exciting dinner and auction of the Whale's Tales this coming Friday night. Welcome, Kathy.
Yes, thank you. Whale's Tale Trail. And it's all those whale's tails that you've been seeing around town, the 6-foot resin whale's tails that were made by Padar Dalthorpe and his students out at the university.
Mm-hmm. Our art professor.
That's right, mm-hmm. The sculpture professor.
Yes.
They're quite dramatic and all excitingly decorated, and they're all going to be auctioned off Friday night at the Jack. Begins at 6:30 with a 4-course dinner by Lorraine Durr. And then the each artist will say a few words. We should have some images of the creation. Sponsors will be recognized, and then outcry auction for all 10 of them.
So this is your chance, folks. If you've seen these beautiful painted whale's tails around town, I know we had one on the UAS float.
That's right, for the July 4th parade, mm-hmm. Pua-Maunuan crowd, dive splash.
Oh, yes, just a lovely one. I mean, they're all great. And then I think there's also been one that's been living kind of across from the Nickelodeon Theater entrance.
Uh-huh, yep.
Gosh, where have some of the other ones been? Anyway,
I can give the list for.
Okay. There we go.
Yep.
You got it right here.
Yep. We had a competition and chose the best 10, and the number one is Dan DeRue's bubble feeder that's on the awning at the Juno Drug. That's sponsored by Juno Drug, and then Clarissa Rizal and Lily Hope have created Whale Friend in Tlingit, that's sponsored by Huna Totem, and that's been at the airport. Right,
yes.
In the baggage area with a nice
that.
Interpretive sign. And then Jerry Smetzer, The Story of Floon, that's been at Paradise Cafe. And then Bruce Simonson, Tales on the Tail, is in honor of the 40th anniversary of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Who knew they were 40 years old?
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Yeah, so I think it's coming up. I think it's actually year 39. Mm-hmm. But that one is called Tales on the Tail and is digitized versions of lots of different posters from the last many years. Then Laurelie Allison Miko's Juno Roller Girls Kick Some Tail is out at the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter and sponsored by them. And then Pua-Maunuan and Jay Crondell and Christine Crooks, as part of Plain Rain, have Dive Splash that's sponsored by Chris Myrtle and Corvus Design Landscape, and that's the one that's been on the wedding cake downtown in Marine Park. And then Averill Valise has Places in Culture, a beautiful one, at Commercial Signs and Printing. And then Bethany Rodriguez Patchwork Paratus is, with all Coast Guard themes, is out at Willie's Marine. And then the zippity-doo-dah people who decorated the stop signs around town for a long time, they call themselves the Alley Cats. That zippity-doo-dah one is out at True North Federal Credit Union. And then Nona Diamond has A Tale of Two Cities, sponsored by North Pacific Erectors, that unfortunately suffered vandalism. We were very unhappy about that. It was out at the new visitor center downtown. But it's back under the wing at the Jack, and it's been completely redone. So we're just happy that she was able to reconstruct it after vandals attacked it.
Yeah. So tell us about the fundraiser Friday night, kind of what's the agenda? How's it all going to go?
All right. So it's the 4-course dinner by Lorraine Durr and the Johnson Youth Center students who are learning in the culinary school are going to be doing all the desserts. And then when the dinner is over, the program begins, which is each artist saying a couple words about their creation with some slides, some images. We'll recognize the sponsors, and then we'll go right into the outcry auction. When the high bid is announced, the sponsor has the right to meet that high bid and take the whale home, or to turn the bid, the creation over to the high bidder. So each sponsor has sort of a right of first refusal. Yeah, so there's some real interest and suspense about whether the sponsor is going to go.
So it sounds like those listening who are very interested in owning one of these whale's tails, it's got to start strategizing now.
That's right. Strategize now.
Okay.
Yeah. By Friday morning at 10 a.m., we hope to have all of them at the Jack, so there can be a public viewing. You can come and look at any of them that you want. And then the dinner starts at 6:30. And I would guess that the auction would start about 7:45, 8 o'clock.
And these are all painted with waterproof paints. You can obviously they've been outside.
They
are.
They're all waterproof. You know, they might last longer indoors, but they're all waterproof and you know, with appropriate chemicals that have. And they're all mounted also, so that they're ready for your front yard or your, you know, living room maybe.
And they're light too, aren't they?
Yes. Well, they're 55 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And we had a friend who was helping us move them, putting them in the back of his truck, and found that they're also aerodynamic. You know, they were trying to fly out of the truck. So
okay.
We have to get them all ready to be moved around. And may I say what the menu is?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is Lorraine Durr's four-course meal on Friday night to start the fundraiser for the Whale Project. She's got roast red pepper soup, and then a salad, and then roast pork tenderloin with apricot miso glaze, black rice, asparagus, and then the Johnson Youth Center groups are doing the desserts. And this is Lorraine of Shea, Alaska fame, who ran the cooking school for quite some time. So
sounds delicious.
That'll be exciting.
Oh, what an evening. And what a project, Kathy. This is very exciting. I mean, I think this, you sort of just dreamed this up, and now to be on the verge of the fundraiser and the auction and the four-course dinner.
Well, this is a Skip Wallen, Bill Overstreet, Bruce Vitello, you know, over 15 years, I think this started quite a long time
ago.
Yeah,
we'll backtrack a little bit. In a nutshell here, tell us, what is the Whale Project and what is the fundraiser for?
Okay.
And for those people who might not be aware.
All right. So in honor of the 50th anniversary of statehood, a group of citizens got together and thought that this life-size breaching humpback whale sculpture with fountain would be an appropriate tribute to the 50th anniversary of statehood. And we, as a committee, have commissioned Skip Wallen, who is really an internationally known sculptor who lived here for more than 40 years. And he did the big bear by the courthouse that the kids all sit on, and then the Gang of Four at Bezuidenhout, and then some really remarkable sculptures in Geneva, Atlanta, other places in the world. So we have commissioned him, and the foam, 26-foot tall foam, has been created, and now it has been separated, chopped up, and sent across the state of Oregon to the foundry. And this is Parks Bronze Foundry, which is where Skip has done the other major sculptures, the Lend-Lease one in Fairbanks, if you've seen the one in Fairbanks, which is now the largest sculpture in the state of Alaska. When the Whale Project is completed, it will be the largest in the state of Alaska.
So we're ready to pour the set. Well,
not quite to the phase of pouring the hot metal yet, because the third phase is where we're at. The first phase was Spike, the little whale that's going to the university that's on the lawn.
Okay,
at the Jack.
Okay.
Right, the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
And we're very much looking forward to having Spike out at the university.
Yes, I know Spike's about to migrate at some point. And then phase two was creating the full-size foam breaching humpback, which we've done and paid for completely. Now phase three is getting the funds to get Skip to the foundry to create the casts for the full-size whale.
Okay, so this is the big fundraiser for stage three.
Stage three.
Got it.
Yep. We need about $125,000 to get him to do this. Tickets on Friday night are $75, and we think it'll be a bang-up, smash-up, fun evening, and we just invite everybody to come. Tickets are on sale at the Jack or online at jahc.org or at the bookstores.
Kathy Ruddy of the Whale Project, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And all the best with this Friday's fundraiser.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
What is nature worth? Can its value be quantified? Some ecological economists and policymakers say it's important to have a common language of value when making decisions about land use and environmental management. Dr. Robert Costanza of Portland State University says that nature provides us with many services that we can value, services for which we would otherwise have to pay dearly. Wetlands, for example, help protect us from hurricanes and floods and purify surface waters. Dr. Costanza and his colleagues calculated the value of the ecosystem services of the state of New Jersey. They determined that freshwater wetlands in the state rendered services worth about $11,000 per acre per year, and the state's beaches provide services worth about $42,000 per acre per year. They calculated the total value of New Jersey's ecosystem services at approximately $18 billion a year, about as economically valuable as the state's construction industry. Studies like these help us understand the economic consequences of altering natural habitats. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler here, your Monday host, and with me in the studio is Jim Panor and Kirk Duncan from the City and Borough Solid Waste Coordinator, Jim Panor, and of course, Kirk in charge of Public Works, and they're here to tell us about a very exciting event called e-waste. This is a chance to get rid of your e-waste this coming Wednesday night. What's happening?
Well, it's something new that we're trying. Jim will tell you a little bit more in a second, but when we do our household hazardous waste events, we get so much electronic waste, TVs, monitors, towers, computers, that it just really slows up the process. So what we want to try is just have an event that's Wednesday night from 5 until 9 at the Household Hazardous Waste Facility. The traffic will be rerouted. People can follow the signs.
Now, is it out by Costco?
It's the Household Hazardous Waste out on Commercial Boulevard.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to route people rather than going around behind Southeast Furniture Warehouse that way. We're actually going to go up Jenkins Avenue, which is right there by the Wells Fargo Bank, and come around and go through the water department and exit onto Commercial Boulevard. And people can bring in TVs and laptops and all of that from 5 until 9 on Wednesday night.
Okay. And now, is there a limit to how many you can bring?
I know that I'm really going to hesitate to say this, but no, there's no limit. In the past, household hazardous waste, you could bring in one TV or one monitor. We're going to tell, this isn't for businesses. This is for residents.
Okay.
And this is the opportunity. I myself had 3 notebook computers and 2 towers to drop off. And a DVD player. So it's a chance for people to take advantage of this. There's no charge for it. And we will have another one of these in the near future. So if you're out of town or it doesn't work out for you, we'll do another one of these days.
Well, this is very exciting because, I don't know, you kind of look around your house after you've been here for 10 or 20 years and go, that TV's out of date and Salvation Army doesn't want it.
Exactly.
Or you have these massive monitors that... Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you. This is really a great opportunity for people.
I think it's something that Jim's put some advertisement out. We're not trying to promote it a whole lot because I think we're just going to get inundated. I mean, just again, I had 7 items that went into that will go into the event. So it's and I'm not that unusual, I don't think, although
no.
A lot of other people would say differently.
All right.
Just like myself, I have 3 TVs, 1 tower, and a couple keyboards that I need to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And the landfills changed their regulations here early this year. They stopped taking TVs. For a while, they were letting a TV with each load come in, and they've totally stopped that now. So we have to step up to the plate and do business a little differently, and this is one way to do that.
We're really excited, too, because Jim has really done a great job hooking up with Total Reclaim down in Seattle, And they actually strip out everything out of this. And the only thing that gets not recycled is plastic. And so they take out everything out of these. So, and they do something, what, Jim, 60,000 pounds?
800,000 pounds a week is what Total Reclaim does. I know the owner, he started in 1993, his name's Jeff, and he started with five employees. Two of them was family. And now he's still in business. He has an office in Anchorage, an operation in Seattle. They have 230 employees. And they do not export harm. That's kind of what Kurt was referring to. Some companies say we recycle, but they only get what they can really make money on and ship everything, you know, to a third world country. And that's exporting harm, actually. They don't have the environmental rules we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so all of the stuff is going to be shipped down to Seattle.
Right. It all gets boxed up in shipping containers and goes down to Seattle and then gets redone.
So this is a new connection for the CBJ then,
yes.
If you will.
Yep.
Well, how exciting.
It's really very cool. We're looking forward to it.
And, yeah.
It's just an opportunity for people to get rid of all their electronic waste.
But only residents.
Only residents at this point in time.
Okay.
So, we got a call from a motel that had 100 TVs, and we'll take care of that through our small quantity generator program.
That generates lines. Could you imagine three trucks with 100 TVs each?
Oh, man.
Now, the line would get long.
Yeah.
So we're going to defer from that.
Okay.
Hope to see a lot of residents, though.
Yeah, so this is 5 o'clock after work Wednesday, the 12th of September.
Yep.
And that's just right, that hazardous waste facility on Commercial Boulevard.
Exactly.
Okay, if people have any questions, is there a phone number or website they can go to?
Yeah, my phone number is 780-6009. Solid Waste Coordinator, it's on juno.org also.
Okay. All right, anything either of you would like to add?
Thank you for having us.
Hey, thanks, Katie.
Okay,
good to see you.
Thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
You bet.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. This is Katie Bosler, and it's been my absolute pleasure to host the program today. I will be your host on Mondays for the foreseeable future, so really looking forward to that. Want to let you know that tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore will host. He'll talk with divas Lori Sonderstrom and Bobby Mitchell. Boston Christopher and Kevin Bennett will be here to highlight Perseverance Theater's production of Mice and Men. And continuing his series on sustainability issues in Juneau, Pat will interview Nancy Waterman and Kate Troll, the chair and vice chair of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, about the activities of the commission in recent years. And Patty Newman will be here to talk about MAP testing in the school district. That, and as always, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. Tomorrow, Tuesday the 11th of September at 3 o'clock on a Juno Afternoon, KTOO FM. Let's take a look at the weather real quick. It looks like it's mostly cloudy skies in the forecast for today and tonight. With some scattered rain showers overnight and rain likely by tomorrow. Rain heavy at times tomorrow through Thursday. And then we get to Thursday night, Friday, back to mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. And mostly cloudy skies by Friday night through Sunday with that chance of rain. Highs around 54 and lows around 45 degrees. Hey, want to let you know that at 5 o'clock today on our sister station KRNN 102.7 FM, I will be hosting, as always, the Monday Tideline Show with Katie B. Very exciting. I'll have a guest in the studio, Harrison B. He is an absolute singer-songwriter, bluesman, very soulful musician extraordinaire. He'll be sharing some new tunes with us around probably the 5:30 hour on Monday Tideline with Katie B. Also started a new feature called 3 for 3, listener Gabe Kelly gave me three songs that go together. I look forward to sharing those with you, as well as some of my Klondike playlist. Just rock that playlist on leg two, and those of you coming off the Klondike, you know, you can't get enough running songs, can you? You are listening to K2. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. K2 also broadcasts on these translators. Valleynock Bay, tuned to K276AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear K2 on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also hear K2 on JCI Cable, Digital Channel 871. And KRNN can be heard at Digital Channel 872. And Excellent Radio, KXLL, is at 873. We're also, as always, online at www.kto.org. Again, sister station KRNN is at krnn.org. And Excellent Radio is at KXLL.org. I'll see you on the radio in about an hour on 102.7 with the Monday Tideline Show. And if not, I will see you on the radio next week right here on a Juneau afternoon. Want to wish you all a good week. Up next is All Things Considered. I was about a minute off. Let me let you also know that tonight on Focus on Community, Veterans for Peace will present a two-part Peace Talk program. First half of the program will be discussion with David Swanson on the nonpartisan nature of the peace movement and why Veterans for Peace stood up at both the recent national conventions to advocate peace. Second half will be a discussion of the dedication of the downtown Bishop Michael Kenney Peace Park on Friday, September 21st. Guests will include Charles Rohrbacher of the Diocese of Juneau and members of the local chapter of Veterans for Peace. That is Focus on Community right here at 104.3 FM K2, 7 o'clock tonight.
This is not a strike I wanted. It was a strike of choice that is totally unnecessary.
Teachers strike in Chicago. Hundreds of thousands of students are affected and parents are scrambling.
For Monday, September 10th, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, the last teacher strike to hit Chicago was 25 years ago. We hear about what's changed and what's at stake this time.
Later, a look at election time, foreign policy, and where the presidential candidates stand on China.
We have an unhappy history of candidates taking a tough line on China during a campaign for political purposes, and then after the election, essentially adopt the policies of their predecessors.
Plus, the latest campaign fundraising numbers.
And NFL athletes kick off a debate about same-sex marriage.
Those stories coming up. First the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta traveled to Shanksville, Pennsylvania today to visit the Flight 93 Memorial and remember those who died there during the September 11th terror attacks. NPR's Tom Bowman has more.
One day before the 11th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, Panetta said the memorial at Shanksville is a final resting place of American patriots. 40 passengers and crew were killed on United